Thank you very much for having me today. It's very nice to see your faces, and I'm happy to be speaking to those who are in Zoom as well. My name is Rebecca Meyer-Rao, as you know, and my pronouns are she and her. My background is in theology. I am the daughter of a Lutheran pastor, grew up in the mission field in Argentina, then decided to pursue theology, went up to the PhD, taught at Edgewood College for 10 years. My focus has always been on the intersection between spirituality and justice, with a special focus on liberation theology. I came to Worker Justice Wisconsin because I was tired of talking about justice. I wanted to do something. And Worker Justice Wisconsin is an interfaith organization. Many of you know the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice and the Workers' Rights Center, which merged in 2018 to become Worker Justice Wisconsin. And so we have a worker center, and we also do a lot with faith and labor allies. So I'm going to start by going over this handout that everybody that's here should have. If you are watching over Zoom, you can find this on our website, which is workerjustice.org. Then go to the tab that says For Faith Communities, and then Labor in the Pulpits. And you'll see this is a 2023 handout. So as you can see here, our mission is that Worker Justice Wisconsin is a Madison-based nonprofit that builds collective worker power together with faith and labor allies. And the centerpiece of Worker Justice Wisconsin is our Worker Center, where non-unionized and mostly Latinx and immigrant workers come when facing workplace issues such as wage theft and discrimination. I like to share this information just so you can see the sort of things that we see every single year. You can see that last year we partnered with workers to recover $121,560. That sounds like a lot. It's not. It's just the tip of the iceberg. And so just to say, this is in Madison and Dane County. We operate primarily here. And we are aware of way more than this that goes on in Madison and Dane County. Many times from adults, but as we talked about child labor today, we also see child labor exploited, kids that are working 18 hours a day in some cases. So, you know, not always, but there are days when they have to work that much, and that is here. So we just have to be very careful about that. So of the people who open cases with us, 52% of the workers were women. Most of them were Latinx, so that was 91%, 4.5 African American, and 4.5 white. 88% of the workers prefer to speak Spanish. So we all speak Spanish at Worker Justice Wisconsin, because it is the primary language of the center. And if you look in the back, there's some national information in a really nice Labor Day prayer, taken from Mujerista theologian Ana María Isasilías. So I encourage you to read that as well. It's really a beautiful, beautiful statement. So before I begin, what I'm going to say, I just want to credit Robert Crystal and Frida Ballard, who are my colleagues at Worker Justice, who did the primary text for the Labor in the Pulpits talk that we are all giving around Madison, Dane County, and in fact, even into the Milwaukee area. As I am a teacher by background, I believe in the power of repetition. I'm going to repeat Deuteronomy 24, 14 to 15. Do not take advantage of a hired worker who is poor and needy, whether the worker is a fellow Israelite or a foreigner residing in one of your towns. Pay them their wages each day before sunset, because they are poor and are counting on it. While it may seem straightforward, there's a lot to unpack in this passage. But what I want to highlight is its internationalism, to use a modern word. I would like to juxtapose a biblical moral imperative to make no distinction between nationalists and foreigners with the lived reality of the immigrant workers who reside in our communities and who have to navigate our country's employment and immigration laws now. As many of you know, Worker Justice Wisconsin is equipped to educate, to empower immigrant workers from Latin America. All of our organizers speak Spanish, and we have four currently. We're looking for a fifth. During this past year, we have seen on the ground how our employment and immigration laws wedge between fellow human beings and who just happen to have been born somewhere else, between a rock and a hard place, and is happening on a grand scale. According to U.S. Customs, in 2022, at least 1.3 million Mexicans, Hondurans, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans came to the United States. In 2023, so far, it's 1.1 million from just these four countries. In recent years, there has been a dramatic increase in the number of immigrants coming from Latin America as a result of COVID, the COVID-induced economic recession, socio-political instability, etc. And I will add that our economy benefits from their presence. And this is a controversial statement, but they pay their taxes, even if they're working legally or not, right? They always pay their taxes, but they do not receive any of the benefits. And a lot of our economy, particularly during COVID, was sustained by immigrant workers who couldn't take time off because there was no safety net for them. Many of these people come to the US expecting to find a better life and, crucially, decent and fair work. But the sad truth is that our employment and immigration laws cultivate an extremely inhospitable environment that places many immigrant workers in precarious positions, making it easier for employers to exploit them and thereby, excuse me, I got my pages off. And thereby violate the basic moral principle of international solidarity outlined in Deuteronomy. I want to give you some recent examples. Earlier this year, an immigrant worker reached out to us because he had recently been fired by their previous employer, who claimed that he got a Social Security no-match letter. Sometimes the Social Security Administration sends these letters out because of a technical error or an expiration. The SSA has nothing to do, that is Social Security, has nothing to do with verifying one's immigration status. So even if somebody has a good immigration status, that means that they can work, those letters can still come. When employers get those letters, they often immediately react and fire the employee because they think they're working illegally. By the way, even if they are undocumented, nothing has to be done because there is no way to prosecute that. The employer assumed, because he received this no-match letter, that this worker was undocumented and used it as an excuse to fire them and to not pay them the $1,600 he owed them for work already done. In other words, this employer tried to get away with extracting from another human being free labor. The case seemed simple enough. We called, explained the situation to HR, that a no-match letter legally is neither grounds for assuming a worker is undocumented nor legal justification for denying the worker payment. This worker got most of the money they were owed sent to them as a result. So that's a win. But when the pay arrived, a portion of the total amount was missing. We called the HR again, but this time the HR representative we spoke with, high on anti-immigration feelings, assigned himself the duty of threatening this worker, whose legal status he did not know, with reporting him to the authorities. The worker, feeling intimidated, dropped the issue, and the remainder of the money owed to them was basically not paid. I'll give you another example, a much larger example. Four construction workers came to Worker Justice Wisconsin in July, so just this summer, because they were owed $22,000 in back wages since November. So if this had accumulated starting in November, and by July, they were fed up. All four were Hispanic immigrants. Moreover, they could not get in touch with a small LLC, FDM Construction, that had hired them for this large construction project overseen by the company Stevens Corporation. Have you seen those signs around town? So, by show of hands, who here knows about worker misclassification? Okay, so a few of you that are here know about it. I'll tell you. Misclassification is endemic in the construction industry. On most major non-union sites, big construction companies hire subcontractors to hire workers to do specific tasks, insulation, drywall, painting, and so on. These subcontractors, however, often convince a worker to go get their own LLC and hire the necessary workers on their business title. Why? Because that's how these subcontractors get out of being responsible for wages, workers' comp, accidents, and injuries. Although the worker with the LLC might seem like the boss, the subcontractor is the one giving the orders. Meanwhile, the workers who come to the project often have no idea that the system of subcontracting and misclassification exists to cheat them. When project money dries up, whose wages go missing or get delayed over and over again? When workers get injured and the small LLC has little to no workers' comp, what do you think happens then? We see these cases all the time. Well, coming back to those four workers who were owed $22,000, with the assistance of Worker Justice Wisconsin, these workers went straight to the actual boss, which is Stevens Construction, and demanded payment because they knew that ultimately Stevens was responsible. All these subcontractors, everybody saying, I can't pay. The person at the top is Stevens. So through their collective action and bravery, and they went to talk three times and made one video, these four workers were able to recuperate their full amount. $22,000 within 2 weeks because they stood up for themselves together. But I'm sad to say that as of right now, they are a minority. Their success is a minority. A conservative estimate in 2022 positioned that 10% of all construction workers, over 14,000 people, experienced the consequences of misclassification. Our on-the-ground experience shows that it is overwhelmingly immigrant workers who are targeted precisely because they feel vulnerable and the threat of immigration-based retaliation is real for them. I will say one other thing. In this country, you cannot work legally unless you have those authorization papers, right? But anybody can take out an LLC. So when somebody comes and they need a job, and somebody says, well, just get an LLC, it's fine. Never mind that we're not gonna pay you workers' comp, we're not gonna pay you all these things, taxes, you know. But this person can take an LLC that same day and go to work. Anybody can have an LLC. That's a problem. Without a doubt, it is an uphill battle to educate immigrant workers about their rights and how to fight exploitation together. Organizing is one proven method, as the case of the Stevens workers shows. Another effective method is worker cooperatives. Is anybody here familiar with Just Coffee?
Yes.
Yes.
Union Cab?
Yes.
Those are cooperatives. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, great. For those of you who don't know, a worker cooperative is a business that is owned and managed democratically by the workers themselves. They are the bosses. In addition to workplace organizing, establishing a cooperative is a vehicle for empowering workers because it avoids the unequal imbalance of power between employer and employee. An imbalance of power that is exacerbated when the employee is an immigrant. While it is true that undocumented workers can legally work as business owners, as we've already established, the structure of a regular LLC limits that benefit to only one person, the business owner, while all the other workers beneath them remain in the precarious situation as the employee. The LLC model does not liberate the undocumented immigrant from repeating the same patterns of abuse. In other words, sometimes the person who's at the top of the LLC perpetuates the abuse that they would have otherwise been subject to. On the other hand, workers and cooperatives all equally share the legal protection of being a business owner, while also holding each other to account without fear. The democratic structure of the cooperative model means that the workers themselves set the standards of their work and can ensure dignified and just employment for themselves and each other. This is why Worker Justice Wisconsin incubates worker cooperatives. In other words, we use this LLC loophole, but to uphold a democratic, fair work environment. By way of example, last year, we shared with many all over town the story of the Crushing It apparel workers. Did you all hear about this? Essentially, it was a group of workers, 8 workers at an apparel company, and they turned in a petition to their boss because there were some really bad working conditions, including very, very high temperatures in the workplace. And this, as soon as they turned in this joint petition, they were fired on the spot. That is called retaliation under the National Labor Relations Act. They have been fighting it. Eventually, they voted for a union, they had to file about 22 or 23 unfair labor practice charges with the NLRB, which they won all of. They have a union. Their boss refuses to bargain in good faith just yet. But the union and we are pressing them, and we will have a press conference on September 12th. So look out for that, because the workers are done waiting. They're about to speak up in public. This screen printing shop, you know, he stole their wages. He had terrible working conditions. You know, they signed the petition. They were fired illegally. They have a union now. They're continuing the process. But the thing I want to tell you is that a group of these workers decided to form a screen printing worker cooperative of their own. And they want to compete directly with their former employer. Look out for that. That's gonna be very, very cool. They are about halfway there. They are finalists to a big grant to help them in the process. And they are on fire. At Worker Justice Wisconsin, we will incubate this group until they launch. We have another group that we are also incubating called Chisme. And Chisme is a food cart. So if you ever see that, go and try it. They have excellent food. So how can you get involved? Well, first, we're a nonprofit, so you're not going to be surprised when I say you can donate to Worker Justice Wisconsin. How do you donate? Just go to our website and press the donate button. We don't get corporate sponsorships ever because we are here for the workers. So a lot of our support comes from community organizations and people like you. You can also donate to our main fund or the Solidarity Fund, which is a strike fund for workers when they go on strike, like the Crushing It workers had to do because they were forced out of work. You can also, by the way, join worker protests, and you can come to ribbon cuttings of these cooperatives. Earlier, in something that was read just earlier today, you know, it talks about when Mother Jones goes and there's the kids see that everybody's supporting them and they see people care. I have had that exact experience with these workers. They see you all there with them and they're like, wait, people care? That's amazing. So please consider joining those pickets. And how do you find out about them? You go to our website and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get all the information. Second, you can buy from co-ops. Keep track of where the co-ops are and buy from them. If you're interested in learning more about cooperatives, or have a great idea for a cooperative to incubate, contact us. And again, you can just go to our website and that, or if you remember this, our co-op incubator is Frida Ballard, and it's just frida@workerjustice.org. Finally, I'll mention tomorrow's Labor Day.
Yay!
Are you familiar with Labor Fest? Come on! Yes, come to Labor Fest. At 2 o'clock is a solidarity roll call. You know, and just come to our table and say, I want to join Worker Justice Wisconsin in your solidarity roll call, and come up on stage with us. And let's do the roll call together. There'll be many workers there as well. And finally, come to our Faith Labor Breakfast, which happens every spring. And our main speakers are the workers themselves. Come hear directly from them. So thank you very much for being here. And for listening to this, and for being such wonderful allies.